Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestling Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 563-999-3065. That's 563-999-3065 if you'd like to get in on our conversations. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. One of the major topics of the show today is going to be, is there a new bloodline in the WWE? And if there is, will this lead to a bloodline versus bloodline feud? And if it does, will it actually be anything we're interested in? But we also are going to take a look at some of the storylines that you guys should be looking for or looking forward to leading up to Backlash. And taking another look at some of the fallout from the AEW CM Punk footage now that people have had a chance to comment on it. So there's a lot to get to. Start once again with this footage that AEW aired. We are now, because of the backlash that, no pun intended, because of the backlash that Tony Khan is getting, and it's considerable. People are trying to distance themselves from it. So what we're hearing now is that, well, nobody wanted to do it. Everyone told him it was a bad idea. No one was a willing participant in this. Not the announcers, not the Young Bucks, nobody backstage. Everyone said it was a bad idea, but Tony Khan went ahead and did it. I don't know how much of that is true. But I can tell you this. The Young Bucks are executive vice presidents of AEW. And I find it very, very, they said, we're just not going to do it. It's a lousy idea, and we're just not going to do it. That Tony Khan would have took some sort of action against them. It's highly, highly unlikely. So I think what happened is Tony Khan either convinced them somehow that this angle or this footage would have worked into an angle by which they were going to tell the public, we were distracted on that night by CM Punk's antics. And because we were distracted and we had to put on our executive vice president cap to not really think like pro wrestlers, but more like executives, we lost focus. And because we lost focus, we lost the match. And that's his fault. But here's the thing that I guess no one really understands. You do not bring up the names of people like this. You just don't do it. He's gone from your federation. It's one thing if he was not wrestling anywhere. He's wrestling for the competition. You're literally giving the competition free publicity. And you had to understand that CM Punk fans were going to take a look at this and say, oh, he did nothing wrong. Oh, he's wonderful. Because CM Punk fans are delusional when it comes to things like this. If that footage showed CM Punk kicking a puppy across the backstage area, they would have said, well, he was saving the world from a rabid animal. Because that's the way CM Punk fans are. He can do no wrong. Now, in reality, we told you before, and I'll tell you again, CM Punk, who was famous for saying, show me the lie, I've showed you the lie. He said that Jack Perry confronted him. It's not true. We saw the footage. Jack Perry was confronted by CM Punk, rather aggressively. Now, there was no audio, so quite obviously, Jack Perry, we don't know what he said. I'm going to assume that CM Punk told the truth, and Jack Perry said, well, what are you going to do about it? Big deal. So you're pissed off. What are you going to do about it? And that's where CM Punk shoved him. Huge, gigantic mistake. CM Punk is a seasoned veteran. And he should know better than to take the bait. And this is exactly what CM Punk did to the Young Bucks during that media scrum that they had. He baited the Young Bucks and said, well, if you don't like what I'm saying, why don't you come knock on my dressing room door and we'll settle it. And then they went and knocked on his dressing room door. And I told you at the time, that's not what executive vice president should do. They were called out and they responded out of anger. And that's not professional. Well, the same holds true for CM Punk. If he was called out and responded out of anger, that's not professional. But at least the Young Bucks did it after the show was over. CM Punk did it right in the middle of a show, biggest show in their history, and caused pandemonium. I'm not saying Jack Perry's not to blame for some of it. He is to blame for some of it. But you cannot just say, oh, this just, CM Punk did everything right. No, he didn't. He didn't do anything right. He did nothing right. It's a case of no one did anything right. CM Punk did nothing right. Jack Perry did nothing right. Tony Khan did nothing right. None of them did anything right. And the reason they didn't do anything right is because Tony Khan is not respected backstage. Tony Khan is, in fact, not a leader. The one thing CM Punk said on Ariel Helwani's show that was 100% true, that I can't show him the lie, is when he said Tony Khan may be a nice guy, he's not a leader. Here's the reason why. You can be full of great ideas. You can be a great businessman. You can have all of your ducks in a row when it comes to running a business. But if no one underneath you respects you enough to listen to you, enough to behave under fear of being fired or whatever, you're not a leader. A leader is someone that everyone respects and they listen to. If Tony Khan was truly a leader, CM Punk would have said, I would love to beat this guy's ass, but I respect Tony Khan too much to do that. This is his federation. This is the biggest show of his career and the federation's career. And doing this would only lead to controversy and chaos. And I respect Tony Khan too much for that. Haven't you ever done that in your own life? Haven't you ever, let's say you're on a social media site and you start arguing with some idiot who's a complete idiot, and you know they're a complete idiot, and it starts getting nasty and personal. Haven't you ever said, look, out of respect to the person's post that I'm responding on, I'm not going to respond to you. I don't want to turn my friend's, you know, post into a pitching match between us. Haven't you ever walked out of some place and say, out of respect to the rest of the people here, I'm not going to get loud in this setting. I'm not going to cause chaos in this setting. Because you have that switch in you that says, I respect where I am. I respect I'm in a quiet library. I'm not going to scream if I get mad. I respect I'm in a hospital. So if there's an argument, I'll step outside because there are people here who are, you know, very sick and loved ones who are worried. CM Punk does not have that chip because he doesn't have respect for anybody except himself. Jack Perry could have walked away, could have said, I'm sorry you feel that way, and just walked away, but he doesn't have that chip either. And Tony Khan could have said, okay, here's the situation. We're settling it in 2 seconds. I see CM Punk starting to approach Jack Perry. I walk over to both of them and say, move it, both of you. Not the time nor the place. Instead of doing that, Tony Khan hides behind his desk and then says, I was in fear for my life. Well, what kind of a leader is in fear from his life from the people that he leads? That doesn't make a ton of sense. Now we're also hearing that Will Ospreay wanted to make a comment about CM Punk, and someone was smart enough to tell him you can't do it. He already made a comment about Triple H and the grinding and the whole nine yards and how he basically just married Stephanie for to take control of the company or whatever he was indicating there. And look, that was ill-advised too. Very ill-advised. See, the problem with some wrestlers is they do not understand the difference between cutting a really good promo and just saying something super controversial to get some publicity. And that's a shame, because there's a big difference. Nothing Will Ospreay said helped him in any way, shape, or form. Didn't help his character, didn't help sell his match, didn't help anything. It just made him look bad. And now I'm hearing that there could be some legal ramifications to showing this security footage on tape, because, you know, there's still legalities here. But it goes to show you that in AEW right now, there is no one who cares about Tony Khan enough or respects him enough to literally go to him and say, you can't do this. This is absolute suicide for this company. It's not going to help. It's not going to do anything. It's not going. The Young Bucks could have done the exact same thing without showing any footage. The Young Bucks could have said, everybody knows what went on when we lost. And everybody knows that there was chaos. And we just weren't focused. But we're going to fix that this time. That's all they had to do. You didn't have to show security footage. It wasn't about an angle. It wasn't about setting up a match. It was about Tony Khan getting a little bit of revenge because CM Punk went on Ariel Helwani's show and made himself look good, which is all CM Punk knows how to do. And he lied. Okay, so he lied. Big deal. Then if somebody asks you a question, Tony, if somebody says to you, did you see CM Punk's interview with Ariel Helwani? You say, yes, I did. And if they say, is that fact or fiction? He could say, it's absolute fiction. CM Punk approached Jack Perry. I have the footage. We have the footage. We're not going to show it, but, I mean, you know, if push comes to shove and he wants to make a deal of it, I can prove to you that CM Punk was the person who approached Jack Perry first. CM Punk was the person who got physical first. End of conversation. That's it. That's what you would do. You don't show it on your TV show. The problem is this. Tony Khan sees it slipping away. He sees WWE doing 2.65 million. He sees WrestleMania as the biggest box office WrestleMania of all time. He sees him cranking on all cylinders now and leaving him in the dust, and he's desperate. And he's thinking to himself, what do I do? Remember when Eric Bischoff said, hey, Cactus Jack won the belt tonight, so you don't have to worry about tuning into WWE because we've already told you how their main event ends. That's going to put asses in seats. Mick Foley is champion, right? And guess what it did? Everybody turned their TV sets. Everybody's like, oh, my God, Mick Foley won? Let me go watch that. It backfired. It completely backfired. And it was the beginning of the end for WCW. This could backfire in the same exact capacity. Now, if Tony Khan truly is a leader, Tony Khan has to issue a statement. And Tony Khan has to say this was a mistake. We did not think this out properly. And really what we were hoping or attempting to do is to justify the fact that we had to suspend Jack Perry and fire CM Punk. And in reality, it's not something we needed to justify. And we certainly didn't need to air. So we apologize for that going forward. We're learning from our mistakes. We're relatively new. And we're going to make mistakes. But the good part is we can own up to them and we can correct them. That's what he needs to do. He's not going to do it. And the reason he's not going to do it, he doesn't think he made a mistake. He thinks the people who said he made a mistake are making a mistake. And that's a problem. And as we see this leadership literally steering the boat in a million wrong directions, we're starting to see people kind of hedge their bets on whether or not they even want to be there. Now, Miro's come out and said, no, Tony Khan's a great person and the Federation's doing well. And Edge just said the same thing. Everything's wonderful, but what is it that you want them to say? See, they are professionals. They are not going to say, if the ship is sinking, they are not going to say, boy, this is a sinking ship. I never should have joined up here. What a mistake I made. Oy vey, right? They're not going to do that. They're going to defend the Federation that they're in because they're professionals. So, of course, they're going to say that. They're not CM Punk. So we'll see where this leads. But in reality, Mike, I think Tony Khan has to take a step back, evaluate this situation, realize he made a mistake, move forward with this as quickly as possible, maybe issue a short apology, and then from this point forward, mention nothing about the WWE ever again. Just focus on the AEW.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, think about it. Yeah, Miro didn't say a word. Sting chose to go on his retirement tour at the right time. Even Mercedes Moné, who we know has a big mouth on certain things, she's relatively stayed quiet on this, and she just signed. So you got all those people that are ex-WWE guys that aren't saying a word about it. Even Lana, even CJ Perry is not saying a word about it. She's a professional. And so you're right. Yeah, what's his name? Bischoff wrote that book, Controversy.
Controversy creates cash.
Yes. Well, maybe Tony Khan found a way to get a hold of a copy of that book and read it.
Problem is, what Eric Bischoff meant was controversy when it comes to wrestling angles. Controversy does turn into cash. If you get fans talking, Cody Rhodes should win. No, Cody Rhodes shouldn't win. It's controversial, you know. Cody Rhodes is better chasing the belt. No, Cody Rhodes is better being the champion. Oh, Sami Zayn should have never been the one to beat Gunther. No, that was the perfect person to beat Gunther. That creates cash. Controversy like the Vince McMahon scandal, controversy like the Tony Khan airing this footage, that does not create cash. Pandemonium, which is not good for any business. So, listen, if you're Tony Khan or you're an AEW fan, you've got to understand, Tony Khan is in over his head. And what he really should do, I understand this is his personal toy. He likes to play booker and wrestling manager, and I'll do this, and I'll write angles, and I'll do this. He likes to do that because it's his money. But if he was a real businessman, I might invest in a Chinese restaurant. I might say there's a Chinese restaurant need in my town, and I'm going to invest big money into one of the best Chinese restaurants you can possibly have around, because all we got is a little one hole in the wall, and that's not sufficient, and I'm going to blow them out of the water. But I don't know how to cook Chinese food, and I'm not really sure what the public would want. So instead of me trying to pretend I do, I hire somebody who does, and I basically tell them, I'm the money man here. You're making the decision. I'm financially backing those decisions. If Tony Khan wanted to do that, that's fine. Tony Khan's the guy in the kitchen trying to make chicken chow mein. And he doesn't know how to do it. That's an issue. And Tony Khan is also the guy that when he makes a mistake, he refuses to acknowledge it's a mistake. If Tony Khan were a real leader, I'll tell you three times when I knew Tony Khan was not a real leader. One, when CM Punk at the media scrum sat there right next to Tony Khan and basically said, this federation hired people that don't know what they're doing to be executive vice presidents. It's being run very poorly, blah, blah, blah. Tony Khan sat there with a doofy smile on his face while his own member of his roster was running him down and the company down. The time that you stand up and say, excuse me, this media scrum is over. Everybody out. And then you have a very long talk in your office with CM Punk. And you tell him, you can try to relive your pipe bomb years all you want. Here's a fact for you, buddy. This company signs your paycheck, and you don't go in front of media cameras after one of our biggest pay-per-views when we're supposed to be talking wrestling and run this company down. That's a no-no. So number one, you're not getting paid for tonight. Number two, if you ever do it again, you're suspended. That's what a leader does. Number two, when one of the wrestlers, I forget who it was injured and on his way to the hospital, nobody knowing whether he was in a really good shape or horrible shape with a possible major head trauma, Tony Khan, instead of saying, I know I'm supposed to come out there and do some stupid little dance with somebody, but I need to go to the hospital and check on my guy. My place is to go there and make sure he's okay. No, Tony Khan decided I'm going to come out and dance on the stage because that's more important. And number three, when Mercedes Moné literally said, yes, I've signed with AEW. I mean, I'll be back in WWE someday. There's no doubt about that. That's my ultimate goal. Well, then if you're Tony Khan, you say, well, guess what, honey? You're dropping your first couple of matches. You want to, after you've signed a contract with us, you want to make that kind of statement? Okay. Well, guess what? You're going to put some people over now. He didn't do any of those things. And the reason he didn't, Todd, is because he's not a leader.
Well, you're actually right there. Like you said, Tony Khan, from day one, he was never a leader. He was just like one of the, trying to be like one of the boys in the back, trying to be buddy-buddy with this, with the superstars. You know, he's going to end up losing a lot of fans, a lot of contract people who works for him. He needs to step away, technically.
Well, see, that's the thing. You start to lose faith after a little while. You start to lose faith. You say to yourself, well, we're 3 years plus in, and our ratings haven't moved an iota except for when something really, really, really big happens, like the major signing, like when we signed CM Punk, the first appearance, and maybe the second appearance helped ratings. After that, it went right back down. We signed this person, and all the ratings went up for 1 week, and then it went right back down. Do you understand that the signing of Mercedes Moné, the signing of Okada, and the signing of Will Ospreay did not move that needle at all? Because people grew wise to the special announcement this week. Another big signing this week. You have to tune in. It's the greatest signing in the history of pro wrestling. People grew wise to that. There's only so many times you can tell someone it's the biggest announcement in the history of the world and then not deliver before they say, eh. See, the ratings should have come from the storylines. The ratings should have come from people who tuned in saying, I can't wait to see what happens next week. But because there was no storyline, you had to promise a big signing. You had to promise a big announcement. You had to promise something earth-shattering because they weren't tuning in to just see the program. That's a mistake. And that's a mistake that Tony Khan is going to have to live with now. But going forward, it's one thing to make a mistake, folks. Everybody makes mistakes. Tony Khan, for all of his love of wrestling, and I don't doubt that he loves wrestling, for all of his love of wrestling, he doesn't understand it. He's going to make mistakes. He's never really been in this position before. So, yeah, you give him some time, but it has been 3 years in. When he lost Cody Rhodes, I said on this show, there's more to this than meets the eye. Cody Rhodes literally was the man who made this federation, right? He went around to all, when he got released from the WWE, he went around to all the indie shows, made a great career for himself, more money, he said, than he was making in WWE, doing indie shows, and proving to people you don't need the WWE. You can do this on your own. Then he decided, myself and a few of my friends, we're going to start a federation where wrestling is going to be the primary objective. And this was his vision. This was his baby. Tony Khan was the money man. And then all of a sudden, Tony Khan became not the money man. He became the man. But you don't give up your baby if you think your baby is doing well. So when Cody Rhodes walked out of that federation, Mike, I think we all had that same thought. And that thought was, something's wrong that we don't know about, that Cody Rhodes clearly does. Let's see if Mike is there. Mike, you there? Nope, I guess we lost Mike for a second. Hopefully we're still on. Todd, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, so when Cody Rhodes walked out, I think, if I recall right, all of us on the show said there's more to this than meets the eye. And it looks like we were right.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about this whole thing with the Cody Rhodes and the Tony Khan situation. Like you said, like we all said a while back, there's more to the story after he left, before and during when he was in AEW. There was more to that story of what's going on behind the scenes and we don't all know about. That's what it was.
Yeah, you see, what they were trying to say is, well, Cody Rhodes got his feelings hurt because he was trying to go out there and portray himself as the face, and fans were booing him. Fans were just not into Cody Rhodes. They were booing him out of the building. They were reacting poorly to his promos. And he got butthurt and said, well, screw you guys. No. Because at the end of the day, Cody Rhodes is a great businessman, too. And Cody Rhodes would have said, well, if that's what they want, just turn me heel. I'll turn heel, disingenuous heel. I will make big money off of it. That's not the reason Cody Rhodes left. You'll notice that they're not really even talking too much about the friendship between the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes anymore. At one time, they were very, very close. Something happened. Chances are we're never going to know exactly what, but something happened that made Cody Rhodes think to himself, this is not going to work anymore. So do I stay on a sinking ship and go down with it since I was one of its captains, or do I jump in the life raft and head to safety? He chose the latter, and look what he's doing now. So you think that AEW people aren't looking at Cody Rhodes? You know, when he first left, everybody said, oh, he's going back to WWE, and they're going to make him Stardust, and they'll be dropping matches to Tozawa. Did they do that? No, they didn't. Oh, nobody there will drop matches to him because he started AEW and they're going to punish him now and none of the wrestlers are going to drop matches to him. Did they do that? Seth Rollins dropped 2-3 straight matches to him. And I could argue at the time he dropped those matches to him, Seth Rollins was the biggest name in the company. Also a professional who said, well, this is the way it should be because we got to prove a point. And the point is that if you come over here, you're going to be treated fairly. I think Cody Rhodes has been treated more than fairly. So now if you're AEW people, you're taking a look at this. And you're saying, Cody got out for a reason, and he's doing better now than he ever was. Maybe the grass isn't so green on this side of the fence, Mike. There has to be more to this Cody Rhodes story than just Cody Rhodes getting a little upset because fans didn't buy his face persona.
Yeah, we've always said that there's more to this story than meets the eye. I mean, look, they took away all his power, and they claimed that he hated the heel persona, whatever it was that they claimed that he hated. I mean, and that's the thing. There's more than this. It's like the Transformers. It's more than meets the eye. I mean, here's the deal with Cody. Triple H could have very well have held it over his head that he broke that throne, right? And Triple
yeah.
H didn't. Triple H didn't. So you got to, and basically they're, Triple H and Cody Rhodes are on really, probably really good relations right now. So, I mean, we thought, well, once Cody was a Vince guy, right? He's the one that resigned him. And once Vince left, then Cody was going to be buried. Well, Cody was not buried.
No, far from being buried. Far, far from being buried. Anyway, all right, so let's get to some of the angles and storylines that the fans should be looking for going into Backlash. And I think one of the ones that's probably on the forefront is the Sami Zayn rematch against Gunther. Now, obviously, Gunther is going to get his rematch at Backlash, but it would appear as though they're going to add Chad Gable to the mix. It would appear as though Chad Gable will work his way into that match somehow to make that a three-way dance. With the narrative that, well, Gunther's really up against it now. He may have underestimated Sami Zayn, and now he's not going to underestimate him anymore, but now it's basically going to be two-on-one because Sami Zayn and Chad Gable are friends. That gives Gunther a fairly good excuse. It also puts Chad Gable in a situation where many people would say, well, he's in there to drop the match. They don't want Sami to lose the belt. They don't want Gunther to get pinned again. So now they've written themselves into a corner. Gunther, they don't want Gunther to win the belt back. He has to have a rematch. We don't want him pinned again. So how do we avoid that? Well, we'll add Chad Gable. Chad Gable will get pinned. Gunther's protected. Sami Zayn's still the champion, and everything's fine. That's possible. That's very possible. But don't sleep on the fact that they may take that belt off of Sami Zayn and give it to Chad Gable. And I'll tell you why I think that might be a possibility that people are overlooking. Number one, the WWE's heard the cries for years, and I'm one of the people who have cried it. The first person who starts the feud with a guy who just won the championship is always going to lose. You don't just win the belt and then they take it away from you. So you already know, oh, so-and-so, whoever Damian Priest is going to fight, he's going to beat, right? Whoever Bayley's going to fight, she's going to beat. You don't want to be that first person because, oh, well, obviously you're going to lose. So they may want to try to break that cycle. Secondly, they already have an underdog who rose to title prominence in Cody Rhodes. They already had a guy that was his main thing was chasing the belt, not sure he's good enough to get it, and he got it. And then they did the same thing with Sami Zayn. They basically gave the same exact speech of winning the belt, almost verbatim, because that's how close they are in character when it comes to being underdogs who over-succeeded, right? So do you want two of them to be the champion? Maybe this is the way of getting Sami Zayn back into chasing a belt again and Chad Gable taking a shortcut that could potentially make some people say that wasn't right. Doesn't necessarily make him a heel, but boy, it makes him an opportunist. Maybe Gunther does something to him, does the power bomb. Two power bombs, and then Chad Gable knocks him outside the ring and quickly gets the pin. Something where Gunther clearly was the one who caused Sami Zayn to lose the match. And Chad Gable doesn't necessarily deserve the title based upon that, but he's still the champion. Then you'd have a series of Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable matches, I suppose. Don't sleep on that. That's very possible. But I do think it's pretty obvious that Chad Gable, Mike, will be added to the Gunther rematch with Sami Zayn.
And it's very possible that they will be added, and he will be added. And look, a series between Sami Zayn and Chad Gable, I'll watch that all night long, you know?
Mm-hmm. Me too. I mean, that's a fantastic setup. Fantastic setup. And if you do it the right way, because I hear a lot of people saying, but we don't want Chad Gable to be a heel. It's going to ruin the whole Alpha Academy. He doesn't necessarily have to be a heel. He just could be a guy who said, I saw my opportunity and I took it. That way it's perspective again. Sami Zayn fans are going to be like, well, Chad Gable ripped Sami Zayn off. But Chad Gable fans could say, well, I mean, I don't know. It's every man for himself. He didn't cheat. He took advantage of an opportunity. It's a little bit, you know, underhanded, but, I mean, it's not cheating. So what's the big deal? So you would have that perspective. Student against the teacher, right? That's kind of what it is. I think it would probably be a good idea because right now you have two champions, and I could argue three. Because Bailey's sort of like that too. I could argue that you currently have three champions, underdogs who rose to the occasion. I mean, that's nice if you have one. And I suppose it's okay if you have two. Do you need three? Can you have a dominant champion? Rhea Ripley's a dominant champion. She's the only one, right? Can we have a champion who's a little bit dominant? You just lost Roman Reigns. He was dominant. But he was dominant in a different way. He was dominant and he lost every match. He just, the problem was he had the whole bloodline there to cheat for him, so he won. Can we have a champion who's a little more, like Gunther, again, was very dominant, right? Now he's lost. So you've just lost two very dominant champions then with underdogs. Cody Rhodes, you're clearly trying to make no longer the underdog. Cody Rhodes, you're clearly trying to say he was the underdog. He's no longer the underdog. He is now the guy to beat, and it's not going to be easy. That's fair. Sami Zayn's not that guy. Sami Zayn has to be the underdog. If he's not the underdog, he's not popular. So I wouldn't be surprised if they take the title off of Sami Zayn. They're not going to give it back to Gunther because they want Gunther and Cody Rhodes. That's what they want, and I don't blame them. That's the match, that's the money match. So they can't have Gunther drop to Sami Zayn again because if he drops to Sami Zayn again, well, then I guess Cody Rhodes should be able to beat him no problem. So he won't. So this rematch cannot end with Gunther getting pinned. That's why I think they're going to add Chad Gable to either eat the pinfall, Todd, or to win the belt under odd circumstance.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Gunther, he was the Intercontinental Champion for 606 days. And now he don't need that belt. Now he's like over with the crowd as a heel to go after the big time belt, the World Heavyweight belt or the WWE belt, one of those two belts.
Right. And in order to do that, they will not have him pinned again. I would argue having him pinned the first time was a little bit ridiculous. You maybe could have had a stipulation, like a last man standing or something, and done it that way. But they chose not to. They chose to go with the I'm underestimating him and I got surprised gimmick rather than the he won but he didn't pin me or make me submit gimmick. Second thing we're probably looking at is Rhea Ripley versus Liv Morgan. This is bad news for Liv Morgan, and it's bad news for Liv Morgan fans. Liv Morgan's not winning. Liv Morgan's had her shot at the title. It did not work out. We told everybody, and I remember very clearly getting screamed at in emails, why do you hate Liv Morgan? She's so wonderful. Why are you always picking on her as champion? I wasn't. I was trying to protect her. I said she's going to be great. She's going to be someone who, for the future of WWE, is going to be one of the top people. But she's not there now. And if you force her to be there, put her on top of the mountain when she's not ready, she's going to fail. And when she fails, the WWE is going to say, she's not the one. That's why I didn't want it. But that's exactly what happened. So now they've decided, well, right off of her victory over Becky Lynch, Liv Morgan's going to take on Rhea Ripley. Liv Morgan's not winning this. And the sad part about it is this is going, I think, to be Liv Morgan's immediate future. Always the bridesmaid and never the bride. The number one contender, but never the champ. I don't see her being champion anytime soon based upon the poor performance she had when she was the champion. And that poor performance was based upon the fact that the WWE rushed her and she wasn't ready. She's much better now than she was. Just in that one short year or whatever it was, right? She's gotten a ton better. And I would argue if she was never the champion and you put the belt on her now, she might do okay. But she was, and it wasn't good, and it left a bad taste in the WWE's mouth, and they're not going to do it. I think that's where it's going, though, Mike. Looks like Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley at Backlash.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, we know what they're trying to do with Rhea Ripley. She's headed toward being a face, and it looked like what they're trying to do with Liv Morgan is some sort of bratty type, like heel type persona, right? Crazy girl, heel,
yep.
Bratty persona, right? Which could work, but for it to work, you got to win, and she's not going to win this match.
No, she's not going to win the match. And see, that's the thing. You're not even doing Liv Morgan any favors, and I'll tell you why. Rhea Ripley's very popular. She could be a heel all you want. You can say Rhea Ripley's a heel. She's in the heel faction. Rhea Ripley, for all intent and purposes, is face. Because the vast majority of people root for her. So you can put the heel persona underneath her name all you want. It's not a reality. You're not going to be able to build a big face off of beating the hell out of Rhea Ripley. I would argue that if Jade Cargill came out there right now, we'll get to Jade Cargill in a minute, and beat the living snot out of Rhea Ripley until she was left laying in the middle of the ring, fans would boo the hell out of Jade Cargill. They like Rhea Ripley. So in all intent and purpose, she's face, and you're not going to get another face over by attacking her. So when Liv Morgan attacked her, as Mike is correctly pointing out, it's almost making Liv Morgan a heel in a weird way. She's not going to win, and it's going to set her back again. And I don't think it's a very good first defense. Now, if you wanted to say Rhea Ripley's going to take on, you know, whoever, Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, who's coming back, I'd say, oh, well, you don't know. You never really know. But they're not. See, what they're trying to do is they're trying to tread water until they figure out how to turn Rhea Ripley completely face. Right now, they've still got the Judgment Day going. They don't want to quite do it. They know she's a face, but they don't want to come right out and say it. So now they have to tread water. So they say, well, who do we tread water with until we come up with a gimmick that turns her completely face? Oh, Liv Morgan. Throw her into the mix. She can just eat the pin, and that'll be good enough for a feud. And see, Liv Morgan's the also-ran. She deserves better than that. I'd rather see a Liv Morgan feud with someone she could potentially win instead of going straight to the championship. But we're not going to get it. Todd, it's a shame. I think we're seeing what the WWE now thinks of Liv Morgan, and I think that they're basing that on her first title run, which they were to blame for giving her to begin with.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Well, like you said, when Liv Morgan was the SmackDown Women's Champion, she was not getting over. They just gave her the belt just like that without winning any matches or winning streaks of matches or being undefeated. Oh! Here's the belt. You're gonna be the women's champion tonight without winning matches. Not building up. That was the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Now, of course, we saw Jey Uso become the number one contender, so he will be taking on Damian Priest at Backlash, I would imagine. I don't know why it's not Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre was the champion. Why Drew McIntyre had to go into a match to be the number one contender when Gunther did not have to do that baffles me. And this is a part of the WWE that I've always really hated. And that is there's inconsistency with the rules in the storylines. They play fast and loose with it. So Gunther loses his title and instantaneously says, well, as former champion, I have the right to the rematch. Okay, well, if that's the rule, great. Drew McIntyre was the champion. Okay, it was only 5 minutes. He still was the champion. So he should have the right to the rematch. No, you don't have the right to the rematch. You have to earn it. And then it turns out he doesn't even earn it. Jey Uso earns it. Now, could they throw Drew McIntyre in here? I guess they could, but if they're going to do the three-way with Sami Zayn, they're not going to do it three-way here. Besides, that would be ridiculous for Damian Priest to walk out victorious over that would be ludicrous. So it's going to be Jey Uso. And surprise, surprise, Drew McIntyre will interfere, cost Jey Uso his match, and say, well, now we're even. Remember when you cost me mine against Roman Reigns? Well, now I've done the same to you. I told you eventually what comes around goes around, and now that's what goes around. So this one, unfortunately, is very obvious. It's going to be another Jey Uso loss, and it will probably lead to a longer feud with Jey Uso, at least temporarily, Jey Uso and Drew McIntyre, Mike.
Absolutely. You know, and that's sad. And look, they need to bite the bullet and give Drew his money, all right? With all these people that are going to be out for a while, they need Drew McIntyre. They need him. Give him the money, WWE. Nick Khan, give him the money. TKO, give him the money.
I agree with that, and I'll tell you why I agree with that. Drew McIntyre right now is not their best wrestler, but he's their most interesting character. And I'll tell you why he's their most interesting character. We know who Cody Rhodes is. He's the, I'm doing everything for my family and the fans, and I love the sport so much, and I've risen to the occasion, and I'm now at the top of the mountain guy. Got it. We know who Gunther is. We know who Roman Reigns is. We know who AJ Styles is. We know who LA Knight is. We know who Seth Rollins is. We know all those people. The only one that is really in a gray area is Drew McIntyre, where you say there are times when everything he says is 100% correct. And then there are times when he takes it too far. There's times when his reactions are perfectly justified and he hates the people he's supposed to hate. And then there are times when he's really off base on his vitriol and his hatred for someone. And he's really probably the best gray area heel I've ever seen. Because it's such a gray area that I don't even know if you can call him a heel. It depends on you as an individual. You know, there was once a movie called Unforgiven that Clint Eastwood starred in and directed. And the beauty of that movie was there was no villain. There also was no hero. Everybody in that movie, all three of the main people in that movie, depending on your perspective, could have been the bad guy or could have been justified and the good guy. It really depended on your perspective. So when you walked out of that movie theater, there were people who had differences of opinion. Now, I sided with the law. I know the guy wasn't perfect, but he was, in fact, trying to uphold the law. Now, I'm siding with the Clint Eastwood's character. Yeah, but he was an assassin. He was a killer who killed people for money. In one of these causes, he was right. But look what he's done in his past. Each person had good and bad in them. So it really depended on your perspective who was right and who was wrong. Drew McIntyre is every bit that. I could see someone saying, I don't show me the lie with Drew McIntyre. hasn't lied about anything. He said everything he said is right on the money true. He doesn't come out there and say, Seth Rollins is the most overrated wrestler in the history of professional wrestling, and he's just a complete idiot, and I could beat him with one hand tied behind my back. No, he comes out and says, Seth Rollins carried this company on his shoulders. Seth Rollins has been the guy who really has stepped up here. And I respect the hell out of him, but I do not respect the idea that he's going to go into WrestleMania, have a match that he has no business having, and then he's going to have a match with me, meaning that if I win, people are going to say, well, you know, Seth had a hard match the night before. You didn't. Why is he doing that? We're the main event. Why can he not accept that? That's true. That's the beauty of Drew McIntyre's character. He's playing it better than I've ever seen anybody play it. I mean, you could say, like, Bray Wyatt was a gray area heel, but the only reason he was a gray area heel is people thought he was cool. All the theme thing is badass, and the merchandise is badass, and he's such a good actor. But his motivations were always wrong. He was always the bad guy, but he was the bad guy that was cool. Drew McIntyre's motivations are not always wrong. He's just as likely to attack a heel as he is a face. Right? We could argue that CM Punk had a zero right to lay one finger on Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. So what? Drew McIntyre's out there rubbing in his face. What gives you the right to lay a finger on him? So it's really just a perspective, Mike, and he does it as good or better than anyone I've ever seen.
You know, we've said it before. It took him, what was it, 5 years, 6 years, 8 years away to really get his, away from the WWE to really get his career going. And now look at him. This guy, and it's not just one of the best gimmicks on, it's a very nuanced thing that he's doing and doing it very well. And generally speaking, the WWE doesn't do nuance really well.
Right. No, that's fact. And here's something else that's the beauty of the Drew McIntyre character is, for once, I think the WWE writers get it. For instance, he didn't cheat to beat Seth Rollins. You could have had him cheat to beat Seth Rollins. Oh, he deserved to lose the belt, Damian Priest, because he cheated to beat Seth Rollins. He didn't cheat. It turns out everything he said was right. Seth Rollins overplayed his hand. He was hurt. He was tired. He was not up for it. And despite how hard he fought back, he wasn't enough to overcome a fresh Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre was proven correct. That's really good booking, Todd, because it makes it appear as though Drew McIntyre's perspective was the right one this time.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Drew McIntyre, he's doing everything correct, saying the right things correctly, doing the things correctly, doing that. And, you know, like you said, he speaks the truth, not as a heel, not as a face, as a neutral character.
You know, neutral is a really good way to put it. Drew McIntyre, if he was in, like, a Dungeons & Dragons game, Drew McIntyre would be neutral, right? He might be chaotic neutral, but he's neutral. Here's what you got to do, WWE. You know, we just told Tony Khan what he's got to do. Here's what you got to do. You got to get Drew McIntyre into a room, sit down, see what the hell you can do. He's not going anywhere. He doesn't want to go anywhere. He's not going to go to AEW. He doesn't want to go to AEW. I'm telling you right now, he doesn't. And Drew McIntyre, at his age, does not want to go to New Japan. And certainly, with all of the budget cuts that they've made to TNA, he's not going there. He wants to be in the WWE. You know he wants to be in the WWE. He knows he wants to be in the WWE. He deserves probably the money he's asking for. I don't know how much he's asking for, but he certainly deserves a raise above what he had last time. And he deserves a little bit more control, if that's what he wants, of his character. He's earned that at least. Set him in a room, get it done. Because I got a feeling that once Drew McIntyre is signed, and he knows he's signed, and everything's good, you're going to see even better stuff from Drew McIntyre, as hard as that might be to believe. So Damian Priest, now, what's for him? Well, You know, he's got Jey Uso coming up. Just told you how he's going to win there. You know, Drew McIntyre's going to interfere. We know. Even though he hates Damian Priest, he's still going to interfere on behalf of a Priest for Jey Uso, furthering that I'm neutral character. He's not going to do it because he likes Damian Priest. In fact, he's probably going to beat the hell out of Damian Priest, too. But he will cause Jey Uso to lose. This is not good for Damian Priest's first title defense, if it looks like he really shouldn't have gotten by Jey Uso. But that's the way it's going to go. I had a little discussion the other day about Damian Priest, and I said it's too late to change his name and stuff. But there are people who's calling him like, well, he could be the next Undertaker. Listen, when he debuted in NXT, originally, of course, he was Punishment Martinez, right? When he debuted in NXT as Damian Priest, I said, this is a problem. You're trying to make him a dark, gothic character, and he can't play it. He don't understand it. He doesn't look the part. He doesn't act the part. He doesn't sound the part. And people are saying, that's not why they're trying to make him. Well, what do you mean? Then why didn't they just call him Punishment Martinez? Why didn't they call him, if you can't use that, why don't you call, give him another name? You gave him the name Damian Priest. You're going to tell me that doesn't sound gothic and dark? The Archer of Infamy. And he's really like a Latino gang member. I mean, you could have called him South Bronx Sanchez, and that would have been more appropriate than Damian Priest, right? So when that gimmick sort of failed, they started to let him sort of just be more himself. And as he started to be more himself, he's much more entertaining. And he's much better. But he does not fit that gimmick at all. Now, you can't change his name, I get it. But just forget trying to make him God. Forget he has to wear the black clothing and the dark eyeliner and everything. Forget it. Just forget it. There's nothing remotely gothic or dark about the Judgment Day, except possibly Rhea Ripley, who's not going to be in it very long. What's gothic and dark about Dominic Mysterio? What's gothic and dark about Finn Balor, other than when he wants to play the demon character, which he never has, in the Judgment Day? Never has. Or did he one time, I think, maybe against Edge, he did. But other than that, he hasn't. What's dark and mysterious about him? He's like the guy from the Lucky Charms box. Then you got J.D. McDonough, who's a walking, you know, Funko Pop. And he doesn't have anything dark or mysterious about him. The whole Judgment Day gothy, druid-looking, graphics and everything, for what? For what? They gotta wrap that up. If you want Damian Priest to be a decent champion, you got to get rid of this Judgment Day nonsense. Stop with the druids and the music. It doesn't fit anybody in it. It is the equivalent of the Undertaker coming out to R-Truth, what's up? It wouldn't fit. And it doesn't fit now. So I think they gotta modify that a little bit, Tom, if they're going to keep him as champion for a while.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And, yes, he's definitely – you can't change his name. That's silly. But changing his – gradually changing his gimmick and his entrance, yeah, I think they just got to wrap up the Judgment Day thing and make him way different, because it just it's worked for some people. It doesn't work for me. He's a good worker, and – occasionally he's very funny, but as a bad guy and a guy that is supposed to be threatening, you're not supposed to be funny. So the thing with R-Truth that they did, I'll pass it because it's R-Truth, but what are you going to do next at this point? You know, you're champion, and if you want to make some kind of impact and keep your career going, split away from the Judgment Day.
Yeah, I think that faction is almost – it's in name alone, really. It's in name alone. They've got everything going ass backwards. Dominic should be not the tag team partner of JD McDonagh, should be Finn Balor. Give me Finn Balor and JD McDonagh versus the new Catch Republic, and I'll watch that all day long. That sounds like it'll be a great match. Put Dominic over with the, you know, LWO or the El Legado del Fantasma or whatever, and let it go. Let it go. Let Rhea Ripley turn face. Damian Priest do what he's going to do on his own. The Judgment Day's outlived itself to the point where it's just a name. There's no gimmick behind it. It's just a name with four or five individuals who have nothing in common at all. It's just not working. So, anyway, let's get to what should be where Cody Rhodes is going to go from here. Well, clearly he's not fighting Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is going to be gone for a little while. So who is Cody's first title defense? Well, that's going to be very, very interesting. If I were the WWE, I would certainly make it someone who Cody Rhodes can get over on. But at the same time, someone who could potentially pose a threat in the future. I don't know whether it's going to be Solo. I don't know whether it's going to be, you know, someone else from his past. I don't know what they're doing. But that's going to be the major thing. Who is going to be Cody Rhodes' first opponent? We'll get to the bloodline thing in a minute because we're going to go in depth in that. But who do you think is going to be Cody Rhodes' first opponent, Mike?
I don't know. I mean, you could do I'd watch a Cody Rhodes. I know he'd lose. I know this guy would lose, but I'd watch a Cody Rhodes. What's his name? AJ Styles match all day long. You know, yeah. I'd watch. There's several different guys you put with Cody Rhodes, and I'd watch that match all day long. You know, now which one of the guys I'm thinking about would fit as of right now as his next opponent? It may take him a while to decide that. I mean, it may take him a tournament or one of these things where they have a couple three-way matches or whatever, and then a singles match between the winners of the three-way matches, and that guy is the next guy up for Cody Rhodes. But that would take a month and a half to figure out. See?
Yeah, and the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to throw Bronson Reed or somebody at him where you're just like, well, this is irrelevant. Hey, you know, there's no point of watching it. You already know. You don't want to do that. I would say Seth Rollins, but Seth is going to be gone for a little while. Seth Rollins would be the perfect person to say, look, I stood by you. I told you I'd be your shield. I was. Now you can return the favor. I want a shot at this. You've beat me twice. We almost were at WrestleMania against each other, and it's time we settled it. Because then I'd say, well, I'm not really sure who's going to win. That's very interesting. But Seth is going to be gone for at least a month, maybe a little bit longer than a month. I don't see him coming to Backlash to do this. Tom, who do you think could be Cody's first opponent?
Hard to say, really. Not going to be Seth. It's not going to be Roman, obviously. Not going to be The Rock. I don't know. I'm at a loss right there.
It's tough, right? That's what I said. They gotta play this interesting because you don't want to just throw somebody at them like Bronson Reed or Ivar or somebody you know is not going to win, Todd. So it's going to be tough.
Well, you're absolutely right, though. Like you said, it's going to be tough for Cody, who's going to be his first challenger for the contender for the WWE Championship. And like you said, we don't know who actually is going to be his opponent.
See, and this is why I said it's going to be important, because when everybody was saying Cody needs to win, I said, okay, I agree with you. Cody needs to win. But then his popularity was based on he's got to finish his story. Now you're going to have to make sure he has contenders that make people want to follow his story. And now you're standing here going, I don't know who. Well, what do you mean you don't know who? You had all the time in the world to figure out who it's going to be. You should have a program ready for him. I'm sure you got Seth Rollins in the future. I'm sure you got Gunther in the future. But at the same time, you should have known, well, he's going to, here's the steps. Here's the first story. Cody's winning, so here's his first story out. I'm not sure you do have that. And if you don't, then that's terrible writing. Terrible. Anyway, let's talk about the Bloodline situation because, as everybody knows, we now probably have the beginnings of a brand new Bloodline. On Friday night, we saw Solo sort of take control. Now, I'm not sure Solo is going to be the leader. I don't know, maybe The Rock is. Maybe The Rock's the one who orchestrated all this. Maybe The Rock's going to be a de facto leader from a distance who shows up once in a while. I don't know. But we saw Jimmy Uso out and Tama Tonga in. And for the life of me, if this is what you had planned, then I have to question your sanity at WrestleMania. If you knew that Jimmy was going to be out, and you knew that Jimmy was going to be back with Jay, maybe with Roman as a face Bloodline, then for the life of me, why did you have the match you had at WrestleMania's finish? Could you not have had the match where Jay got hurt or pretended to get hurt and Jimmy make the realization this has went too far? My brother's hurt. I'm the one who hurt him. We've taken this too far. Forget it. I'm helping my brother back to the dressing room. This is done. This is over. We've gone too far. That way, when Solo got in the ring last night and said, you know, loss means something, you could have said he means that he took sympathy on his brother, and that is absolutely unacceptable. But Solo saying loss means something, okay, well, you've kicked Roman Reigns out because he lost, apparently. You've kicked Jimmy Uso out because he lost, apparently. Solo, you've lost more than all of them. If you were going to do this eventually, why did you have Solo drop matches, especially to Cody Rhodes? Right? That would have been one of your big contenders. He's already dropped to Cody Rhodes. He's already dropped to a number of guys. Solo has lost more matches than Roman Reigns and Jimmy Uso combined. So if that was your big plan, your big master plan, why didn't you protect him? If Solo right now was undefeated, or maybe just defeated by like a count out or a DQ or something, this would be a big deal. People would be saying, well, in a way, he's right. He's like the only member of the Bloodline that's undefeated now that Roman lost. And now he's going to take his rightful spot at the top. He's the worst of the bunch. It makes no sense. The writing itself makes no sense at all. So I hope he's not the leader, but I know he's going to be at least the leader as far as being in the ring talking every week because The Rock's not going to be there. And it doesn't make any sense if The Rock takes Roman's side because then you'd have The Rock, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, and probably Jimmy Uso against Solo and Tama Tonga and maybe one other guy. Well, that's not going to be very good. That's called a slaughter. So you can't have that. You can't have that. And we know The Rock's coming back to try to take the belt from Cody Rhodes, so I would assume The Rock is the leader. I would assume what will be revealed is that The Rock is going to blame Roman for losing. He's going to be the one who told Solo, you take care of it while I'm gone, but when I come back, I will be the leader of this new Bloodline. because then that would lead to eventually what they always wanted to have, which is Roman Reigns versus The Rock. Except this time, Roman Reigns will be the face. When Roman Reigns returns, I can guarantee you it will be to save his cousins from a beatdown. And you will probably have a war of the bloodlines. But you got to have a leader that looks as though they can handle Roman Reigns. That's not Solo, and that's not Tama Tonga either. So if it's The Rock, it makes some sense. If it's not, I don't know. But I still say, Mike, that if you're going to make Solo at least the guy who's going to be every week in the ring, acting like the leader, even if he's taking orders from The Rock, he shouldn't have dropped any matches, or very, very precious few, let alone to the current champion Cody Rhodes, because now he's not the contender he should be.
Absolutely. And here's another thing about the whole Tama Tonga thing. There are multiple branches on his tree. I know he's just gotten into the bloodline, but there is still a chance that no matter how slight it is, that at some point, he and the Good Brothers get together. You know?
Yeah, I don't think they'll do it because I don't think they have any. I'll tell you the truth, as much as it pains me to say it, I don't think the WWE sees anything at all in Anderson and Gallows. I think they're jabrones in the WWE's eyes, and they're always going to be jabrones. I think they've hired them because AJ Styles said, "I want them hired." And AJ Styles has some swing, and they're just like, yeah, we'll hire him. I'm not doing anything with him. You don't even see him. I don't think they'll do anything major with him. Not now, not ever. And those guys ain't getting any younger. So I don't see them as being big deals. What they're going to do now is they're going to do Tama Tonga, certainly Solo, and I would guess The Rock. But they may add another member. Because right now, even if it's Jimmy and Jey Uso against those two, that's bloodline versus bloodline. And that's what you'll see at first. But at some point, I think The Rock will come back, or the leader, whoever the new leader is going to be, will show up. And when he does, that's when Roman Reigns will make his return to save his cousins, and there'll be the big flip of the evil bloodline against the now newly faced bloodline. Always said that was going to happen. If you're a regular listener to this show, Tom, you know that I've said eventually Roman Reigns will leave for a while. When he comes back, it'll be to save his cousins from some evil faction, and they will reunite as the face bloodline. Well, now it appears it'll be bloodline versus bloodline.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. We've said it for a long time. As a matter of fact, we called for it, because if you want to keep the bloodline thing going, which is practically the best story they've had going for the last 3 years, where everybody's been glued to SmackDown and even Raw to a lesser extent, but glued to this storyline because it's captivating and fun, and you want to keep that bloodline going, bloodline versus bloodline, I'd sign me up for that.
The only problem with signing me up for that is Solo has not been proven to be a world beater. When he first came in, he was. And I thought, that's what they're going to do. They're going to make Solo an undefeated guy who eventually is going to say, I'm better than Roman Reigns. He can't make that claim. He's lost to half a dozen people. He's literally now probably equal to Jimmy Uso. It's just not good enough. And that makes me think that the WWE didn't have this plan for any length of time. Because if you did have this plan for any length of time, you'd say, well, protect Solo, because he's going to eventually be the leader. And we want to make this leader fairly indestructible. No, you made him a mid-carder. So now the leader of your team is a mid-carder. I don't like it. Todd, it makes me think that they didn't have this plan for a long period of time.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this is like unexpected. We all knew Tama Tonga was going to make debut sooner or later. And like you said, you have a very good factor in this, Paul Heyman. Whose side is he going to be on?
That is going to be interesting. You're right. That's going to be very interesting. I would imagine Paul Heyman is eventually going to be on the heels side. But it's possible he might not. It's possible. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Either way, though, I just don't see why, if this was what you had planned, you would have thrown Solo to the wolves so many times, because it's self-destructive. Doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Speaking of things that don't make a ton of sense, we had on SmackDown two matches that were going to lead to the finals for the number one contender for the U.S. title, which is held by Logan Paul. We had Santos Escobar. Not sure why, since he lost his WrestleMania match. We had Kevin Owens. Okay. And we have AJ Styles. Now, I have no idea. I'm sorry, we had LA Knight. LA Knight. I have no idea why they chose this. But once LA Knight won and you announced Rey Mysterio is going to be one of the members of the next round, and as soon as AJ Styles' name was mentioned, I said, well, AJ's winning. So the finals can be AJ versus LA Knight in a rematch from WrestleMania. You can't make it any more obvious. Why is AJ Styles even in there? He lost. How is he the top contender for the U.S. title when he lost his match? Please explain the rules. This is what I'm talking about with WWE. First, it's, a champion gets an automatic rematch if you happen to be Gunther, but if you happen to be Drew McIntyre, no. Well, a number one contender has got to be a guy who's on the rise and has won his last couple matches, but no, AJ Styles is in there. He lost his match. I can see LA Knight being in as one. I can see Rey Mysterio. I'm sorry, the rest are sketchy at best. So I don't know. So, okay, we already know. LA Knight's winning. He's going to go to fight Logan Paul. That'll be fun on the microphone. And this probably is the guy that LA Knight should be fighting, due to the fact that I'd said from the very beginning, LA Knight's going to turn a lot of people off unless you put him against somebody who you really, really, really want him to beat. AJ Styles was not that guy. A lot of people like AJ Styles. So when LA Knight comes out with his shtick, people are like, well, I don't like LA Knight because he's bad-mouthing AJ Styles, who I do like. You needed to put L.A. Knight against somebody who you say, well, they deserve the bad mouth. That would be Logan Paul. So you got the right guy. You just got to it the wrong way. That'll be a fun match. I think L.A. Knight will win. I think L.A. Knight is on the verge of being a champion, and I think the U.S. championship is probably it. And they'll see how he does from there. Logan Paul probably wants to go and do some other things for a little while. This is another point of contention. Everybody knows I think a lot of Logan Paul is a wrestler. I don't like him. Personally, gets on my nerves. And not his wrestling persona, him. The real him gets on my nerves. But he's great in the ring. He's great on the microphone. He is well above his experience level. For a guy that has been in the business a short period of time, probably the most amazingly rapid learning curve I've ever seen. I mean, they dropped him in the water and he starts swimming like a fish. It's unbelievable. He just gets it. 100% gets it. However, he's one of these guys that's like, well, I want to be a wrestler and I want to be a boxer and I want to be a talk show host and I want to be a business entrepreneur and I want to be an actor and I want to be this. And he doesn't want to be any of them bad enough to devote full time to it. So if you don't want to devote full time to it, then you might as well drop the belt to somebody who does. And I would imagine that would be L.A. Knight. So I think you're going to see L.A. Knight take on Logan Paul, Tom, and I believe he'll probably beat him.
Yeah, I believe so, too. And, I mean, L.A. Knight's worked his butt off, and I think he's well-deserving. Let him have that run. As far as Logan Paul, to be honest with you, yes, I like the fact that he has picked up wrestling so quickly, from his facial expressions to his ring work to his psychology. In less than a year and a half, we've been watching him. It's absolutely amazing how he's picked up on things that take others years to develop. So he has my respect for that, but he cannot commit to full time to being a wrestler. Get that belt off him.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like it's going to go. I mean, if I was Logan Paul, I would take a good hard look. I know he's making big money with the Prime Energy drink thing, and no one says he has to stop that. But if you're as good as you are in the wrestling ring, you might want to take advantage of it and say, you know, for the next few years of my life at least, I'm pretty much going to dedicate myself to being a pro wrestler. I think he wants to hedge his bets based upon the fact he doesn't want to get hurt. I think he's one of those people who says, I like to do this, but I'm afraid if I do this full-time all the time, I'm going to get hurt. And I don't want to get hurt. I think he might be one of those guys. And if he is, then he's always going to be just a part-timer. And if that's all he has to offer, it's sad because he's really, really good at what he does. Really good. I would go so far as to say Logan Paul, this stage is his career, which is in its infancy, is better than some people who've done it for 10 years. And that's amazing. But I don't think he's totally devoted to it. Mike, I think that probably LA Knight will take this, and that seems like he's going to be the obvious one to face Logan Paul.
Absolutely, and that's the thing, which you just said about Logan Paul. I mean, all his time to wrestling, by the time he's 40, 45, by the time he's about LA Knight's age or maybe even closer to AJ Styles' age, he could be the guy. He could be, I mean, if he dedicates his time to the business as a whole, he could be a guy that, much like Seth Rollins did for that time during the, they could put the company on his shoulders and let him go. He dedicated his time.
Well, you don't hear me say this very often. You know, people always write to me and say you're extraordinarily critical of people, maybe to a fault. So when I say this, understand that I mean it. And this is from a guy, again, who personally I don't like. Logan Paul could be one of the best professional wrestlers of all time, and I'll tell you why. Because he has every single tool. There are certain wrestlers who are fantastic. It's no secret that my favorite wrestler is AJ Styles. I think AJ Styles is terrific in the ring. He's always fun to watch. He's a consummate professional behind the scenes. He's conducted himself in such a way he's never been involved in any chaotic nonsense. He goes and does his business. He pulls over he needs to. He wins when they want him to. He carries the company line. He is the consummate professional. And he's athletically as gifted as anybody ever. And he's apparently found the fountain of youth because he's doing this in his late 40s and he hasn't slowed down a bit. But AJ Styles is not a 5-tool player because he's not really good on the mic and he can't really play any characters. And he's not even good as a heel. When you try to make AJ Styles a heel, he's not believable and nobody roots against him. Logan Paul is one of those guys that, A, microphone work, no problem. As a matter of fact, one of his big strengths. Appearance, no problem. Looks like an athlete. Ability to sell his match, no problem. Got that, no problem. But one of the major factors of Logan Paul is, as much as you hate him, it would take me, if I was a booker, it would take me 5 minutes to get that crowd 100% behind him. Because at the end of the day, Logan Paul's heel gimmick is based on the fact that he wants to be loved. Logan Paul's heel gimmick is, I'm great, I'm trying to be great, I want to be this, I want to be that, and all it takes is the right person to do something horrible to him, and the fans would be all about on his side. I'm telling you, he's one of these guys, he's a little bit like The Miz that way. He's one of these guys you could flip instantaneously and the crowd would instantaneously change their opinion. So he has an infinite amount of storylines. You can turn him heel, you can turn him face, you can turn him back to heel, you can turn him back to face. Everything will work out fine. That's a gift. He can play both sides of that coin perfectly. So if he did want to dedicate his next couple of years to professional wrestling, Todd, I think he'd be one of the best ones ever.
Oh, you're absolutely, excuse me. You're absolutely right there, like you said, with AJ Styles and everything. If you give him, like, a mouthpiece, he'd be all right.
Well, that's the thing. AJ Styles was better with a group when he wasn't always the mouthpiece. But let me explain what I'm talking about with Logan Paul. Let's just say that Gunther never lost his title. And let's just say that Logan Paul came out and said, I want to be great, and I think I'm a great athlete, and, I'm this and I'm that, and I'm proud to be here, and, and I'm All-American, and I'm the American story come to life because I own, you say Cody Rhodes is, but I own a business and I'm there, brag it up, but in a certain way. And then Gunther comes out and says, what you actually are is a joke. You're a guy who wants to play professional wrestler. You're a guy who caters to an audience of children. You're not serious. No one takes you seriously. And if I were to take you seriously, I would break you in two. I want you to understand that. Do you think for 1 minute that crowd wouldn't turn on Gunther and instantaneously get behind Logan Paul to represent this country in a match, Mike?
Oh, sure. I'd pay to see Logan Paul versus all three of those guys. Gunther, Vinci, and Kaiser, because each one of those matches would be almost an instant classic.
Well, you could handle it that way, too. Let's say you wanted both of these guys to be heels. Then you could have Logan Paul, who's cocky, say, oh, is that what you think? Well, I got news for you. I can beat all three of you in one night. Your two little henchmen and you. And then Gunther say, okay, well, you know what? We'll take you up on that. Vinci first, Kaiser second. Well, he gets by Vinci. He gets by Kaiser, but he's definitely tired and hurt. And then Gunther just buries him. Literally buries him. And he's gone for a month or so, right? With him saying, I got rid of Logan Paul. When Logan Paul comes back and says, I'd like to see you do that one-on-one. Because if I'm so easy to beat, and I'm such a clown, and I'm someone who doesn't belong here, how come I beat both of your little henchmen? The fact is, you came last, and you came last for a reason, because if you came first, I'd have beat you. then you'd have something, Mike, because people would be like, oh, shit, man, he's speaking truth to power here. Gunther did come out last. Why would Gunther come out last if he was so confident? It's a great gimmick to get him over.
Absolutely. And think about all the people that he's gotten over on by, you know, with the brass knuckles and all that stuff. And he cannot get over on these guys, and they're beating him up and all that stuff. And then you can have somebody like, Seth Rollins, if he's a face, or Jey Uso or somebody like that, come and make the save for him, you know. And if it's him and the Usos versus Gunther and his guys, again, that's another match. That's another series of matches.
Well, you
that
see, that's why there's so much potential. Logan Paul has infinite potential because even though he's a face in that situation, he's doing it out of ego, which means he's close to being a heel still. There's so much you can do with a guy like that who can talk on a microphone like he can talk and put on a match that he can put on. However, I will tell you this much. When we get to this bloodline thing, the Roman Reigns return as a face is going to be one of the biggest things in WWE history. I knew this was going to happen when Cody Rhodes came out and said, irregardless to whether you like Roman Reigns or not, that man was champion for I don't know how long and literally carried this company, and he deserves our respect and he deserves our applause. And the whole crowd started chanting, thank you, Roman. That was the beginning. Nullify some of the heel things he's done. Okay, Cody just did it. Now we know why Pat McAfee slipped and he's fighting the blood cancer thing. Now we know. Put a little sympathy on it. Then add to the fact that Cody Rhodes tips his hat to him, and the fans are now willing to forgive him. The fans are understand how hard he worked. The fans understand that The Rock sort of came in here and sort of stole his thunder. And you've got all the stages set, Tom, for Roman Reigns to come back as a face and get a huge, massive pop from this crowd.
Well, and it will be the biggest pop that anybody has heard in a long time. I mean, mark my words, if they're not in an outside stadium, and if they don't wait until, you know, a million years for him to come back, it's not like they're going to wait until next year's WrestleMania. He's probably going to come back at SummerSlam, possibly Survivor Series if you want to push it out later than that. But when you take all that into consideration, when Roman Reigns does come back, because Cody planted the seeds and the crowd knew it, and the crowd will get behind Roman regardless. When that music hits, boy, will that be something. And you know what? Again, that's great because you're keeping that story going. You're keeping the storyline going, and you're going down a new path with Roman, which will be awesome.
Well, see, that's the classic professional wrestling thing. We always talked about draining all the juice out of the orange as an analogy, right? Well, this is what we're talking about. You got every drop of juice out of Roman Reigns' heel persona. You drained that orange until there was very, very little left. And now, Mike, it's a whole new orange because when he comes back as a face, you haven't even squeezed the orange yet.
You drained it to the point of where there's no pulp. And there's just seeds there. That's how much you drained it. And when he comes back, and, you know, frankly, you know, Jacob Fatu is still out there to be had if they want him in another bloodline. But that's somewhere down the line. But, hell, you could put the original bloodline back together and have Sammy come back in And
oh my
there
God.
You go.
Could you imagine the pop? If it does end up being 4-on-3, can you imagine the pop if Sami Zayn rejoined a face bloodline? Number one, you'd sell 100 million more of those Sami Zayn bloodline t-shirts. The merchandising alone, this is a huge, huge storyline waiting to happen. I caution you, you got to handle it right. And you're already starting to handle it wrong, because if you have Solo as the leader, you've blown it, because he's too easily beaten and he's been beaten too many times. I know The Rock can't dedicate himself for the next couple of months to wrestling, but you've got to do something that makes it appear as though he's calling the shots and he eventually will be back to be that leader. You've got to do it, because Solo can't. I'm telling you, Solo can't, because nobody cares about his matches. He just lost to Seth Rollins. He lost to Cody Rhodes. He's lost to Sami Zayn. There's nobody he hasn't lost to. So how is he going to be the big, tough leader who says, if you lose, you're out? Well, then you're out. You've lost more than all of the bloodline. It doesn't make sense. You've got to have that leader that you say, and of course The Rock calls himself the final boss. Now, you could have a whole situation that's a little bit like Vince McMahon and Stone Cold, right, where if The Rock was to come back, side with the bloodline, and be that power figure, too, that says, hey, Roman, you don't call the shots around here anymore. I'm the boss. Not only am I the final boss, I'm your boss. Right? I sit on the board. Well, then you've got a little bit of a Vince McMahon situation and Stone Cold situation, right, where Roman Reigns says, I'm not just fighting The Rock. I'm fighting corporation who's against me. That, I imagine, would have to be the storyline, Todd, to make this work correctly.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. Like you said, to have Roman Reigns be, like, not just like a regular heel, be like the anti-hero, like Stone Cold Steve Austin did, like, back in the 90s and during the Attitude Era, and fight for to keep your job or something. And
right, that's what it would have to be, Tom. It would have to be a sort of a thing where Roman Reigns and the Bloodline are fighting against the powers that be.
Yeah, that would be. And again, you're going to get the fans. I like what you said about if it's a 4-on-3 and Sami Zayn's music hits and he's like surprise fourth member, man, will that give everybody who's watching chills. And that's just, you know, those fans will go absolutely ballistic. The last pop I heard that was so loud it was deafening was when the Hardy Boys returned to WrestleMania.
Yep.
And that was an amazing pop. We need a pop like that. And if you put Sami Zayn in there as the honorary use that he was before, where he came up with the, you know, he's not being very oozy, and he was doing things backstage,
right.
And he was like that, kind of like causing a rift between the bloodline, and some like Jimmy was, or not Jimmy, but Jay was taking his side, and Jimmy was like, what, you know, what's going on? Why are you even here? And like, he's so lovable that fans took to him and they went with it. Could you imagine if they didn't go with it? What kind of storyline we'd have now?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. If you had a situation, say at the Survivor Series, where you're going to have four on, Roman Reigns doesn't have four. He has himself, Jimmy, and Jay. And them saying, there's not a soul who'll side with you because there's a few people out here might like Jay. None of them are going to trust Roman, and none of them are going to trust Jimmy. They don't like you. And by the way, anybody who does become that fourth member, well, you're gonna have problems, because that means you're going against corporate wishes. Because corporate wishes is 3-4. And Sami Zayn comes out. Are you going to tell me that roof's not going to blow off that building? It would be absolute stroke of genius to do that, because it reinvents Sami Zayn all over again. It reinvents Roman Reigns all over again. It reinvents a ton of merchandise all over again. It puts Sami Zayn as an underdog who now has to fight this corporation along with the bloodline. And it proves his point from years ago when he said, I never would have left the bloodline if I was treated correctly, because I was happy here. it would all come full circle, Mike. It makes sense, and it would be, I think, a ratings bonanza and a merchandise bonanza.
Yeah, and here's something else that could happen. Okay, we've talked about over and over and over and over and over again, what if Naomi, all right, what if Naomi, all right, joins the Bloodline, right? Now, I know they got her doing something else right now, but it's very easily done to take away from that and put her into this, right? Well, here's the deal. What is The Rock's daughter doing in NXT right now? She's being an authority figure. She's being an authority figure. Bring her up, and while The Rock's off doing what he's doing, she's his consigliere. She represents The Rock, and there you go. Then you'll be able to add Naomi to this whole mix, and there's your woman versus woman thing.
It could happen if she wants to wrestle. I'm hearing she might not want to, but we'll see what ends up happening there. Now, we're putting a lot of faith in the WWE to do the right thing. And once again, every time we've done this in the past, we've been horribly disappointed. And there's no assurance that we won't be horribly disappointed again, because even on Friday night, there was two things that Friday night there was one thing, and then in WrestleMania, there was one thing that literally flabbergasted me. And I said, you're just self-destructing. At WrestleMania, you let the Final Testament loose. I have no idea why. I have no idea why. You literally had the Authors of Pain just come in. Not only do they drop to the Street Profits, then they drop in a match with the Street Profits and Bobby Lashley. They've won nothing. They've won zero matches. And Paul Ellering, who is a absolute genius on the mic, has not uttered one single word. Why in the hell are you not giving the microphone to the guy who's the best talker in the whole entire group? I don't know the answer to this. It's baffling. And then as much as I love Naomi, and I do, and I've called her one of the best athletes in the WWE, she was the best, in my opinion, until Bianca Belair got there. Then I'm not so sure, but she's one of them still. But you can't let her beat Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany Stratton just got there. She was on a roll. You had something with her. People were like, oh, well, she's going to be big. I wonder who's going to be the first person to beat her. And you let it be a mid-card match on Friday night. I can't believe it. I almost choked to death when I watched that. I said, this can't be right. Something's got to be wrong. I don't want to see Naomi against Bayley. Tiffany Stratton against Bayley would have been fan-freaking-tastic, because you have absolutely the antithesis of each other with these two. You have Bayley, who's supposed to be the girl-next-door type, and you have Tiffany Stratton, who's the world is all about me. I cannot believe that you threw that away. So there are two things that they have literally thrown in the dumpster, Mike, and I just, for the life of me, can't understand how they did that.
I can't understand either, you know, and that's the thing. And again, they do this, you're right in saying I have no confidence in them. We get excited about certain things, and they don't do them, right?
Right.
That are obvious things to do, and they don't do them. I mean, you're right in saying that Paul Ellering, I would wager to say, other than Paul Heyman as a manager, Paul Ellering is one of the best talkers other than Paul Heyman that he have. And what's her name that's in that group as well is not a bad talker either.
Charlotte, no. This is the thing that's frustrating. You hired him back. Is it that he does? So you've hired Paul Ellering back. He's 70 years old. He's not going to get physical. He just walks down to the ring. He has nothing special about him. He's not 7'8". He's not 400 pounds. He doesn't have any physical characteristics that make him look strange or weird or add anything to the group. His strength is that he is a great talker, and you won't let him talk. What the hell sense does that make? It's unbelievable. It really is. It's like hiring a carpenter and telling him you can't use a hammer. I just don't get it. And Tiffany Stratton, somebody's got to tell me that she screwed up backstage and that was a punishment. Because if that was just booking, then they've lost their mind. Because Tiffany Stratton was on her way. I'm telling you, she is a fantastic athlete. And she has the ability to rub people the wrong way. She would be a great heel. And she's the absolute perfect person to go against the newly faced Bayley. Because she is the exact mirror, not the mirror image, she's the exact opposite of the mirror image. You've got this, you know, sort of a elitist, I'm beautiful, I'm wonderful type, you know, the world revolves around me, and you've got a girl next door sort in Bayley who says, you know, I let myself go astray a little bit, but thank you all for sticking with me. And you had it in the palm of your hands. Oh, it's more important that she fights Naomi. Why? Naomi's a great athlete. Nobody's gone crazy over her comeback. Nobody wants to see two friends fight. I want to see Tiffany Stratton against Bayley. But you've already let Tiffany Stratton lose to Naomi, so I guess she would be no match for Bayley. I don't get this booking. Tom, I literally almost choked when I was watching this on replay. I was eating at the time, and I'm like, "That can't be the pin." And when it was, I was dumbfounded. I just don't get it.
You and me both. I was that was thrown together, and for Tiffany Stratton's being brought up to the main roster had more fanfare than, if you will, than Naomi's return. I love Naomi. I think Naomi's great. She's a great athlete. But the gimmick that Tiffany Stratton has, there's some people that can identify with it. I don't see anybody identifying with Naomi. And especially on her return, it was kind of lackluster. And then she's won nothing. You get, if you team her up with Jade Cargill, Jade Cargill gets one move and the pin. So,
right. Well, let's talk about that now. Is everybody convinced I'm right now? Jade Cargill cannot wrestle. Number one, she damn near killed her opponent. Now, I'm trying to think of who it was that she attempted to pick up. And couldn't quite get her. She's supposed to be so strong. Couldn't quite get her. Damn near dropped her on her head. And she only had two moves to do. Let's let Bianca Belair do all the work. And then I'll tag in and I'll do two moves and pose. What do you suppose the reason for that is? I mean, let's be honest. There are people saying, Jade Cargill's fine. She's wonderful. Okay. If she's so fine and wonderful, then please explain to me why the WWE is not allowing her to show it. Ricochet came in. They let him do all of his fancy moves. He may not have won, but they let him show he's good. Tiffany Stratton comes in. Maybe they didn't let her win, but they let her show what she's got. Jade Cargill has nothing. She has no personality. She has no ability on the microphone. She has the look. I'll give her the look. That's it. She's a one-tool player, and you're trying to force-feed her down the throats of the fans who are not going to buy this because you're not even allowing – she can't have a solo match. How the hell is she going to have a solo match? What's it going to be, 5 seconds? She's Nia Jax times 10. I'm telling you, she's going to kill somebody because she don't know what she's doing. Nia Jax is a million times safer right now, in my opinion. And that's saying something, Mike, because she's not safe.
She's not even to Goldberg's level when Goldberg was going on his winning streak, you know. Goldberg at least could get in there and pull off. And to my knowledge, I don't remember him hurting seriously anybody when he first got to WCW. You know,
besides
so, and no, I can't remember it. So Goldberg is better than her, you know. And so this is, yeah, she's got the look. But, and we compare her to Hulk Hogan, but again, Hulk Hogan at least had some skills in the ring. Yeah, he may let fist, maybe a body slam, maybe a suplex, maybe, and then the leg drop, right? Hulk up and then the leg drop, right? That's it. But he did it well.
But she's not even, you know what, Mike, she's not even Goldberg, because Goldberg had two tools. Goldberg had the look, and Goldberg had the charisma. People actually liked him. When he came out, the fans initially really were chanting Goldberg and stuff, and they were all about him. He had that persona. Not just the look, but the persona. She has the look. She doesn't have the persona. She's emotionless. She comes out like a statue, walks down the ring like a statue, wrestles like a statue. No facial expression, no emotion, no nothing. She is literally Raquel Rodriguez minus 10. I used to say that about Raquel Rodriguez. But at least Raquel Rodriguez could do power moves and do them right. And she had a little bit of charisma in the sense that she seemed warm and open. This woman is emotionless. It's just, if there was anyone I've ever seen in wrestling that has less, it would probably have been, what was her name there? The they called All Red Everything there, Tom.
Eva Marie?
Eva Marie. She is basically Eva Marie with muscle. Yeah, it's terrible. I don't get it.
Was better.
I don't know if Eva Marie was better, but she wasn't worse. I'll tell you this, she wasn't worse. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to continue this. And if your ultimate goal is to put Bianca Belair against this woman, Jade Cargill, then I don't know what to tell you, because Bianca Belair is a very, very, very good professional wrestler, an elite professional wrestler, and Jade Cargill is not. And it's, I'm telling you right now, it will be a disaster. It will be a disastrous match. I don't know. See, this is what I mean about the new management. We say, well, you know, all these wonderful things happening with the Bloodline and maybe Sami Zayn getting back in and Roman coming back as a big hero and all this stuff's happening. Okay, but they can't see the forest for the trees. You've destroyed the Final Testament and won't even put the microphone in Paul Ellering's hand, which is just a mystery. You've decided to promote Jade Cargill, who is an absolute zombie, a walking statue in the ring, and you've undermined Tiffany Stratton, who probably is your future. I don't get any of that. So, no, I'm not confident. People say, well, it's the new management now. Vince is gone. Don't blame everything on Vince. Vince was the scapegoat. Everything that went wrong, oh, Vince probably did that. Oh, that was Vince. Well, Vince ain't there. So explain this nonsense to me. But Triple H knows how to use people. Really? Well, then how come he's not using Paul Ellering? How come Tiffany Stratton got thrown under the bus? How come if Solo was going to be the big cheese and the leader of the Bloodline, he was a jabron for the past 6 months? Is that properly using somebody, Mike? I would say no, that's not.
Nope, and that's the thing. I mean, they finally got Bayley to where we think she should be, right? But it took them a while. right? Now, I mean, look, you take a look at that six-person team with Bianca, Naomi, and Jade Cargill, and you look at Bianca, who's been champion. You look at Naomi, who's been champion, who could probably be champion again. So can Bianca. And I've always said that I'd love to see Bianca and Naomi go on a run as a tag team. That.
Yes, because they'd be a legitimate tag team, and if you put them against Asuka and Kairi Sane, that would be just a wonderful match. Even with Bayley, a little bit they dropped the ball, Mike. Though, and I'll tell you why. Bayley did a nice speech, but if I was the writer of that speech, I would have included the following: I would have had Bayley say, "The entire time that I lost confidence in myself and stooped to a level I never should have stooped to in order to try to achieve some kind of success here. You all knew. Every single one of you people knew that wasn't me. Every single one of you people knew what I was going through. Every single one of you people stayed with me. And all I really needed to do was listen to you, and I would have been better off. And from this point forward, that's what I intend to do. Because you guys used to chant and you guys used to sing, 'Will you be my girl?' Well, the answer to that question is yes, I am your girl." That's it. Then she's back to where she's supposed to be. They can't think of that, though, Tom. So instead, they just have her say half of that.
Yeah, and what would have been wrong with saying with her saying what you just said? They let her kind of like, you know, fragment it and. Like, I was sitting there like, okay, and then?
Right.
No pun intended. I was like, okay, and then what? And then what, Bailey? There's more. Just say it. No? Oh, great. Okay. Well, zero impact.
That's the problem. They didn't take it to the nth degree. Always take that as far as you can. Making Bailey back to being that girl next door is important because Tiffany Stratton should have been the one knocking on the door. Saying there's always that girl next door who's just a little less pretty, just a little less fortunate, just a little less talented, just a little less popular. And they're always jealous of the ones that are. And that's me. You'd have had something. I'm telling you, that was the money. And you blew it. So do we have confidence that they're going to handle this? No. But I'm cautiously optimistic because I do see some potential blockbuster storylines. Backlash is going to be important because it's going to point things in a direction. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys on Tuesday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.